Welcome
to the 100th edition of Taboo Topic. I am your host, Ken Drew, and it's been a while since I've been on, and I apologize for that. Some crazy life changes have taken place since we last spoke, but I'm here, finally giving you the 100th edition of Taboo Topic ever. And before we get going with today's episode, I want to give you a quick update as far as one of the changes that have been taking place on this show. The last time you probably listened to an episode was when I was doing the Cultural Blueprint series, which only lasted 2 episodes. and also the Small Government Blueprint series as well with my friend Ryan from Between the Liars, which he has a new podcast now that he's getting paid for. Congratulations to Ryan, if you're listening to this episode. But this year, this new direction we're going to go in, we're going to bring back some of the conversations that I used to have that kind of was like in the same principle as far as the principles of the show Hot Seat, and also we'll apply the principles of the series called Voter's Eye. And I have a rotation that I am excited to talk to you guys about. And the new co-host, or one of the new co-hosts I have here, is my friend from church, Tony Garcia. And he is on here once a month at least. So he's the one that's going to be on these kind of episodes where we're just having a conversation about a particular topic that we feel interested in talking about. And also, we're going to have another co-host that's going to be rotating with Tony that's going to be talking about current events as well. It's not to say that Tony is never going to have a conversation about current events or vice versa, but right now we're just kind of starting off this way. We're just kind of testing some things out and seeing how it works and see if it actually sticks. So without further ado, folks, let me introduce you to my friend Tony Garcia. Tony, how are you?
Thank you very much. I'm doing pretty fantastic, to be honest. Yeah, I just got over being sick, beginning in last Wednesday, for which I'm abundantly grateful for the fact that it happened after New Year's Eve weekend. So, you know, it's just any sickness can come after that point. That's fine.
That's understandable. So let me ask you something real quickly, because the audience doesn't really know you, right? And so the audience, I want my audience to get a feel for you. And just so everyone knows, this episode, we're not really going to talk about anything in particular other than just I want you guys to get to know my friend Tony. And so you guys are familiar with him. And then next month when we're on again with him, we will talk. That way you're at least familiar with Tony. So without further ado, Tony, why don't you tell the audience of who is Tony Garcia? Like, what is he about, and where do you come from and everything?
For sure. So this is the 5th state that I've lived in. It is about the 17th address that I've lived at, something along those lines. I came from out west. I was born in California. Mm-hmm. I've had quite a few different sorts of occupations, and currently what I've landed at has been working as a DJ for weddings and events and that kind of stuff. And that was actually a pretty big change for me, because up until that point, I had always been more just, you know, entry-level work, that kind of stuff. This has been the first skill profession that I've had where I can actually develop and grow in and be significantly better. So it's been a very intensely growing journey for me, one that I'm abundantly grateful for having had the opportunity to get here. And yeah, at this point, I'm mostly just focusing on growing business. This year, I plan on incorporating an animated series regarding psychology. It's basically going to be about what it's like to experience the world through my eyes, and that's something that I'm going to be spending the majority of my free time trying to work on. Other than that, I came from a larger family. I was the middle child of 5 kids. I was homeschooled up until high school, went into high school from that time onward, And I ironically was talked out of going to college by a college recruiter. So that's a whole story. But yeah, so ultimately I ended up just deciding to see what's out there first before going to any sort of formal education for college. And I'm quite glad that I did. I don't really think I would have had any stronger sense of direction in my life if I had gone to college than without it, but I definitely have less debt to worry about. So, you know, potato. overall, it's been a pretty intense journey for me to develop to the place that I'm at this point in my life, both in terms of my own character and in terms of professional growth. So I'm pretty happy about where things are headed, at least, and excited to push forward in this upcoming year to really get my my plans moving. So it's going to be fun.
I know we're only 10 days late since the New Year's Day took place, but Happy New Year. It's still 10 days into the New Year's.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everyone. So you say you lived in 5 different states. So what states did you live in? What state would you not go back, even if you got paid $1 million? And what state would you go back for $1?
So I've lived in California, Arizona, Colorado, Michigan, and now I'm here in Florida. California being my birth state, there's just something about that fact that makes me very fond of the state itself. I like California, like Californians. I wouldn't live there. It's a terrible place to live.
Even though you're kind of fond of California?
I am. There's a soft spot in my heart for it, but it's gotta go. It just needs to, the earthquake's gotta cut it off the shelf and it needs to sink into the ocean already. It's just California, it's had its day, it's done. It's done.
Dang.
Arizona. I wouldn't live in Arizona again. It was nice. I lived in Flagstaff, which is up in the mountains, and it has all four seasons. You know, it was a very nice climate there. It was a nice place to have spent a few years growing up in and then move away from, but I wouldn't want to live there again. It wasn't a good environment for me and what I want out of life. Colorado, I would say, in terms of the actual location itself and what it has to offer in terms of just the vistas, the overall culture there, the seasons, the city options for, you know, nearby places to travel to. Overall, I would say Colorado is the one place where I would totally live there. If given a chance to some sort of reason to move there, I would totally take it. Michigan was nice. I appreciated a lot that came out of Michigan. I would never live there again. It's a place where it's a nice, safe environment to raise kids in, as long as you're on, you know, the western side of the state and you don't go more towards like Lansing. But it just wasn't quite the, again, it's not a culture that I would like to really be involved in. I just didn't really have much camaraderie there.
Yeah.
And then down here in California, or Florida now.
The south and east coast of California, it's okay.
It's a less prosperous California. It has about the same climate and I would say the main thing is that outside of Miami, it's a significantly safer state to live in. And the biggest issue that I have personally is just that I really enjoy all four seasons.
Yeah.
And Florida, it has two. There's summer and hurricane season, and that is it. It just goes back and forth between those two.
Well, I think it's about part of Florida, to be fair. If you go like more like in Tallahassee, the capital, like near the border of Georgia and Alabama, you probably see more of the four seasons. Where we're at,
yeah,
it's like we'll have like a well, right now it's actually kind of nice outside, but it's like really streaky as far as like weather that's like in the 70s, and then like it'll start climbing back up to like the 80s, and then we'll have another cold front. And I think it's a place where people vacation. So I love it. I love it, Florida. I love Florida. So, but.
Gotcha.
I think, yeah, it's very interesting, though, that you say that you have very fond memories of, like, a state like California. And you have a soft spot for them. Mm-hmm. But I guess, ultimately, so let me ask you this. If the circumstances changed in California where the streets were safer and it was actually more affordable to live there, would you move back there?
There are definitely circumstances. It would have to involve basically Hollywood burning to the ground, a significant overhaul in safety, and a very substantial political shift.
Yeah.
And I can't really conscionably live in a state where they build heroin shelters so that people can safely shoot heroin instead of dangerously shooting heroin, you know, out on the streets and stuff.
Yeah.
The idea that that was their solution to the problem instead of, you know, just trying to combat drugs use. I just don't like the way the state is run. I don't like the
when did political you live
landscape there?
There. Were you, because I was so there during the Schwarzenegger years, the last Republican governor.
Oh. Yeah, I lived there during what I would refer to as my magical childhood years. those are like what I refer to regarding the formative developmental years, where you can kind of vaguely remember memories and things, but you weren't necessarily in control of yourself. You weren't too engaged with the world around you. Some people were forced to grow out of that super duper young. I was not. I didn't really grow out of that until sometime between 10 and 13. So for me, the first decade of my life was very automated, very absent of intentional thought and effort. I would definitely say that I was not at all self-aware for the first decade of my life.
Yeah.
So that would take place in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I lived there in the early 2000s, from 2000 to 2006. So I lived in Monterey. I'm not sure how far you were off from that, but...
Well, let's find out. How far is Monterey from LA?
Oh, it's south then.
Yeah.
I think it's like 3 hours south.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... I mean, you were close. It's only 5 hours south.
No, okay.
So,
well, that's, yeah, that's 5 hours to take into consideration, like, the traffic, I'm sure.
Yeah, right.
So, but...
Yeah. Needless to say, it's a big state.
It's a very big state.
But yeah, I grew up just outside of the LA area, so...
Oh, that's cool. So, let me ask you this, and because clearly you have quite a long journey to get to, from being born in California, get to Florida. What is your testimony? Like, how has God used the events in your life to get you to where you're at today? And I'm bringing this up, the faith aspect, because part of the change that I want to bring to the show is I want to have more of that sense that this, we are coming from a Christian worldview, and I want people to know that we're also not ashamed of the gospel as well, and that we're not ashamed of our faith. So I want the audience to know, like, that's part of your identity as well. So what is your testimony?
So I was raised in Calvary Chapel. Now, Calvary Chapel is, it's kind of a denomination unto itself, where they have a culture that was intentionally adapted to try to appeal more to people in California. And so in California, you have a lot of people who are very busy, don't really have time for like organized religion in general. And so they tried to cater towards that by allowing a more flexible come and go as you can kind of a thing. They tend to have a much easier list of prerequisites in order to become some sort of teacher,
mm-hmm.
or like a elder, deacon, teacher of, you know, Sunday school, whatever else have you. And they're a little bit more charismatic leaning, they're more Baptist leaning.
Yeah.
So there's just a whole section of Christianity that would go into that category.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with a lot of influence regarding things like, you know, being filled with the Holy Spirit and for active visible works,
mm-hmm.
and baptism as like a direct path after salvation. So like you'd be saved and then you would get baptized, and it was like a one after the other, and the baptism was like essentially a response to being saved, that you would be saved, then you would choose to get baptized as like a way of expressing that. And there's a whole theology about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved from California, we originally started going to another Calvary Chapel church, and that ended up not really panning out for individual reasons. There was some in-house politics, you know, that were happening that just didn't work well with my parents. And so
mm-hmm.
we ended up leaving that church and then started doing the church hop thing, where we started to, you know, go to this church or that church for a few weeks at a time, but never really settling down and joining as a member. At one point, we were going to what was referred to as a evangelical free church,
mm-hmm.
where I would then be baptized. That was, I want to say it was like 12 or 13, something along those lines. Somewhere shortly before that was when I would ask my mom to lead me through the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer of salvation, you ask God into your heart, Jesus into your heart, and all that.
Yeah.
So that happened. Baptism happened shortly after that. Once I hit high school, that was a pretty big part of my developmental journey. A lot happened
mm-hmm.
there, which is why there's so many, you know, movies and cartoons and anime and such where high school is a big theme of it, is because it really does have like a massive impact on the direction of the rest of a person's life. Not at all related to what you learn there. Like it has nothing to do with the actual education. It's everything that's not education that affects how your life goes.
All right.
So tons of stuff happened in high school. I was just the worst. And so eventually there was an opportunity to move up and live with my oldest brother up in Colorado. Then things ended up not working out up there. So nothing wrong between him and I. It was just other stuff that we could get into if you want. Then I moved back down to Arizona, lived there again for another few years, and then moved out to Michigan. In Michigan, I made the intentional decision to try to actively get involved with the church. I wanted to be more intentional about being a part of the body of Christ rather than just being a consumer.
Yeah.
And so I actually, me and my two siblings who had moved out there with me, we joined this church that was about to launch. So we were actually part of its like negative first preaching session.
Cool.
And so we were part of that church's initial growth. We volunteered to help with whatever they needed help with, and what they said they needed help with was with setup and teardown.
Yeah.
That, you know, they were renting an auditorium from a school, so they needed help with putting the chairs up before service and then taking the chairs up after service. There was some drama that ended up happening that I was quite bitter about for a while. So we ended up going to a different church, started church hopping again. I actually didn't go to church again for about a year and a half, maybe, until eventually I was like, all right, I really shouldn't. So I, you know, just Googled something, found a church that, you know, seemed okay based on what I was reading online about it. And so I went there. It was this Reformed church called, like, Grace Emmanuel Baptist Reformed Church, I think. And that was one of what I would say is three healthy churches that I've been to in my life. So there was that one. Then the second one. Oh, and I should mention, I've probably been to more churches than I've lived in places. So I would just guess without actually trying to count them all. I've probably been to somewhere in the ballpark of like 20 different churches. So after Grace Emmanuel, I moved down here to Florida, where I then got involved with the same church that my landlords go to, where they actually go to another Reformed church. So,
and that's how we met.
And that would be the second of the three, like, actually healthy churches that I've been to. So, yeah, it's definitely been a 100% consistent rating that Reformed churches have had a good thing going for them, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of sad to hear that out of, like, the 20-something churches you've been to, there's only been three they could say that were healthy churches. Do you think that's one of the reasons, like, do you think there's an issue with the church in America in general, to where, like, do you think to where that there's so many people that have, like, similar experiences maybe as yours?
Yeah, I would say so. I've been using the term Americhristianity for a while now, and there's just a certain amount of individualism, and my rights trump all else attitude that's pervasive in American culture that, unfortunately, the church doesn't do a very good job of rooting out of people. And it just, there's a very deep conflict with some American values. Now, with that said, a lot of what goes into the American Constitution is directly out of people's understanding of what was in the Bible at the time. And so, on the one hand, what America ought to be is very heavily influenced and shaped by the Bible. And then on the other hand, the necrosis of selfishness and pride and sin and indulgence and all that crept back into the church.
Could you define necrosis real quick for the audience and myself, to be honest?
So necrotic is like dead things. So when take, for instance, if you get bit by a rattlesnake, the wound looks absolutely horrible because it literally kills the actual flesh around where you got bit. That area around the snake bite would be considered necrotic flesh, meaning that it's already dead. You're not going to heal it. You're not going to take it to the hospital and have them, like, you know, inject it with anything. It just needs to get cut off and done away with because it's already dead and cannot be saved.
Gotcha.
So that's why, like, for instance, with more fantasy based stories, you would have, like, the necromancer is the person who deals with dead bodies.
I see. Well, it's interesting. Yep. So to pivot back to what you're just talking about the Church of America, the state of it anyway. I, as someone who's also church topped myself, and I think this church that we're attending right now is probably the healthiest church I've ever been part of. I think there's truth in what you say, that a lot of churches in America, they kind of bring the America individualism into the church and into the interpretation of scripture, to where, like you said, sometimes it's more about like rights, our rights triumph what scripture talks about, for example. And right. There's not as much of a communal sense, not to sound communist, but
nothing wrong with communism as long as the government doesn't get involved with it.
well, that gets full. I'm glad you made a political comment, because that'll pivot into our next question of where do your political values and views align?
So when it comes to me and politics, it's been a really interesting journey, just because as a middle child, I developed the most stereotypical middle child syndrome of riding, you know, the line between different groups and things. So I tend to not make either group completely happy, is what happens most often, where my views are too conservative to really fit into anyone who would call themselves a liberal or a Democrat, just because I have been firmly convinced that the Bible is very clear on matters of homosexuality as being a form of sexual immorality, which itself is something that is one of the most talked about vices in the Bible. Like it is a very clear sin, and homosexuality is included under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, there are certain... I like psychology, and I really like seeing how the brain works and things. And so there is a reasonable conversation to have over what people mean when they say gender, as long as they're not talking about sex. Because if we can differentiate those two things, then we can have a decent conversation. There are only two sexes, being male and female, but a reasonable conversation can be had about the concept of gender expression, of like, how do I express being a man? How do I express being a woman, right? Those are things that are a reasonable question to ask, where you have, you know, the Chad, you know, gym bro, always wants to show off anytime he feels threatened by another person, even if they're a friend of his. He'll like try to assert playful but still assert dominance by like putting him in a chokehold or something, just so that he can, like, you know, clarify where he stands in the hierarchy, lest he should be considered to be of a lower value than the other person. And that is a emotional experience that I don't have. And so it's not unreasonable to say that gym bro is expressing a form of masculinity,
right,
without having to say that it is the form of masculinity, and therefore if I don't express it, then I am inferior on the masculine hierarchy, right? Because those are really the only... you have basically like one of, I would guess, three options, being a person who can express different forms of masculinity, you have a person who can express different levels of masculinity, and then you have the idea that there is no such thing as masculinity, and it's all just, you know, social construct that we agree to and all that kind of stuff. And so I would be in the boat of saying that there are different forms of how you can express what it means to be a man.
So basically, if I'm interpreting what you're saying correctly, you think that there could be a reasonable conversation to have as far as the difference between like the sexes versus like maybe gender roles, as far as like you said, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman.
Right.
Is that fair?
Right. That's where I'm at, is that I don't see any common ground for someone who wants to argue that there are argue the cause of like non-binariness, right? That's something where we don't have common ground there. I just have to oppose it directly. But for someone who wants to say something like, why should a man be the head of the household? Why can't women be in XYZ role? Those are things that I think are perfectly reasonable, fair, and good conversations to have. Mm-hmm. So on that end of the spectrum, I tend not to fully align with some of the more staunch conservatives who might just say, like, this is the umbrella, the box that men fit into, mm-hmm. and should always only fit in this box. And if they go outside of that box, then they're doing it wrong. And then women have to be in this box. And if they're not in that box, then it's wrong as well. As human beings, we love categorizing things. That's why we have speciation. And mm-hmm. when it comes to just how we feel about the world, if we can't put it in a category, we don't like it. And so every time we try to understand something, we try to figure out, okay, what are the patterns that we can then correlate to these other things and say, all of these things share this pattern, so therefore they're all in the same category. And it becomes complicated when people are complicated. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes hard to just say men are like this, women are like that.
Yeah. Which I would even say, yeah. I think there's been an overcorrection in society as far as like when we were growing up, like God forbid that you play with a Barbie doll or you play dress up. Right. And then, you know, God forbid you did that. Now, there's been the other extreme where it's like, oh, you're playing with the Barbie doll? You must be a girl now.
Right. Obviously, what's happened is that you have found yourself and you didn't even realize it yet. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm looking at when I see that scene is like, I'm glad that we don't have, you know, 80s and 90s school bullying. Mm-hmm. In the way that's typically expressed in like media of like, hey nerd, don't come in a swirly, you know. Like
I just finished watching I just finished watching an episode of Family Ties, which I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it takes place mm-hmm. in the 80s and one of the teenage girls didn't want to go out with the guy because he was too quote unquote nerdy and he was a nerd.
Right. Yep. So I'm glad to see that, you know, we've
that sense.
Yeah, I'm someone, at least one of my siblings absolutely just despises everything about the term toxic masculinity. And I would be one of the people who would say that toxic masculinity is something that hurt men and women.
Yeah.
And that like there were a lot of men who, for instance, would become fathers, but still have a lot of deep-rooted insecurities, and seeing their child do something that made them feel like their child was doing something emasculating mm-hmm. was then emasculating for the parent as well. And so they would take that out on the child they would perceive it as doing something for the child's own good to say like, oh, put that Barbie down. What are you, gay? You know, that kind of stuff. But It's swinging too hard in the other direction. I always refer to it as the Weeble Wobble effect, where, you know, when you had those Weebles that had a low center of gravity, so that no matter how far you push them to one side, they'll eventually find their way back to center. Mm-hmm. So that happens a lot of times with vices, mm-hmm. is that, you know, we'll get pushed super far in one direction towards a vice. And when we try to course correct to fix that out of our lives, it's very easy to just tilt to the other side. And it basically results in becoming too self-righteous. Mm-hmm. And then you try to break away from being too self-righteous and you start dipping into vices again. Yeah. And so the hard part is not overcorrecting from a bad place, right? There's there are some times, not every time, but there are some times when you have to make small adjustments until you find a good, healthy center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely missing in our culture today. And I think I would agree more with your perspective. I will say, I think when we were growing up, and I'm a little younger than you, but not that, but not a whole lot, but when we were growing up, we were taught much. In
not public enough school for me anyway. To be able to pretend like it's significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at least in public school anyway, I remember teachers would talk about like gender and sex interchangeably, and that we would use, like, if we asked for the baby's gender, for example, we use the term gender, not sex, because it's just a linguistic preference, I guess you can say.
Yeah, they were basically just synonymous terms for the same
thing. So when this whole transgender push came about, really started under the Obama years, I would say, because before then, like, it wasn't really talked about. Under the Obama years with the transgender bathrooms and everything like that, that's when I started hearing these ideas about, oh, gender is not really, is not about biology, it's more about, it's a social construct. And I think, like you, I think that's where I would, you lose me at that point, because ultimately, the DNA does not change, no matter, the DNA doesn't change, whether you call yourself a man or a woman. If you are, if God made you a man and gave you the biological parts of a man, it does not matter how much surgery or hormones you take, the DNA still remains the same. And we can have a conversation, like you said, about what does it mean to be a man? Like, do I have to, do we have to hypersexualize everything? Like the old, the 90s and 80s idea of masculinity, the toxic masculinity they talked about, which I also agree with. I think the Me Too movement by itself was not a bad thing. I think there was some genuine toxic masculinity that needed to be addressed in our culture.
Yeah, the, and workplace abuses. Yeah, for sure.
And treat women more like an actual, like an, someone is in the image of, created in the image of God versus just a sexual object. Like, I totally agree with all that. But that does, again, it doesn't mean we go the other extreme and now say, well, there's just no gender, essentially. Everyone's a cisgender or non-binary.
Right.
It's a, it's fluid. Gender is fluid, I think I've heard.
You can be one day and then you can be another one the next day. A lot of the times, people who want to believe that it's fluid are the types to want to have their cake and eat it too. In that, at the same time, they want it to be that gender is fluid and it can be whatever you want, but they also want it to be that you can't choose it for yourself. That you, so you can choose it, but you can't choose it because it is in your DNA, is the argument, that it's in your genetics and that you're pre-programmed to be that way and you can't help who you are. But at the same time, if you want to be something different, you can. You don't get to, you don't get to say they get to just stay in one little box, that they can be fluid and be one thing one day and another thing the next.
I think, and before we move on from this particular topic, I think ultimately how I see this is they want the idea of gender fluid to be treated as absolute truth when the concept itself is relative. If you're saying that we cannot define gender, but at the same time, you want to also say that is absolute truth, it's contradictory, in my opinion, anyway. So, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, that would bring the conversation to logical rigor, which is a really fun subject that we do not teach in schools. So.
Well, it sounds like you're going to bring in the some psychological aspect to the conversations to the show, which I appreciate. Whatchamacallit, but anyhoot. So that's the LGBTQ stuff that you would probably stand to be more of the staunch. Not necessarily staunch conservative in the sense of, like you said, like you think there's some reasonable common ground in some like micro subjects, I would say, maybe on a more micro level than a macro. But I guess,
yeah,
if someone were to, like, I guess, quote unquote, put you in a box and like put check marks, like you're this, this, and this, how many of those boxes would you say are more conservative versus and more liberal? Because I would say, for me, I think I've developed a liberal streak in me. And I think we talked about this last time we saw each other, where I have more of a liberal streak on certain issues, like climate change, for example. I think there is a reasonable conversation to have about the issue of climate change in the sense of, yes, the climate is changing, and there is evidence that the weather is getting warmer and the waters are rising. But is it so bad to the point where Obama is not buying property on the beach next to the water at the same time? You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So I guess, yes, before we move on, is there any other subjects you would say you kind of break away from the stereotypical conservative? Or would you even say you're more, or not necessarily conservative, more libertarian approach?
Yeah, so I was a party line Republican in high school, where it was just, if it had an R next to it, I would vote for it. That actually radically changed because of two reasons. The first was because of my libertarian friend in Michigan. Yeah. And then the second is because of Donald Trump's election, where I realized that a lot of Republicans are just reskinned versions of
the
Democrats.
Uniparty.
And so, right. So I came to realize it's really the reasons used for voting were like exactly the same, regardless of what the actual president was that was being voted for. The logic and sense and I would even say morals that were used in voting for Trump they weren't what I would call conservative at heart. And so for me, I would say I'm a conservative, not a Republican. And so there are certain things where I take too hard of a stance on to be libertarian, and too soft and open-minded of a stance to really be considered Republican. But I'm definitely conservative in both cases, for sure.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So I guess, just out of curiosity, since you bring up Trump, everyone has an opinion about him, whether you love him or hate him.
Oh, for sure.
I think there is a small group that's kind of more in the middle as far as like Trump. He's arrogant, cocky, whatever, but he has some really good policies. He was really effective. And especially when it came to overturning Roe v. Wade, he was great on that. So what is your surface level general sentiment of the guy? And how do you feel about him running again right now?
So there was this, I'm trying to see if I can maybe find like a political ad about it. Yeah, I guess not. After Bill Clinton, who's, you know, that's before your time, I know. But after Bill Clinton's presidency, one of the rallying cries for why we needed to vote for a Republican next was the concept of character matters. That was kind of the platform that it was put under, was to say, even if you thought that the policies that he did were, you know, good in one way or another, no matter what, you know, even if they turned out well and he did an okay job as a president, right? The fact was that he was a man of questionable moral character because of, you know, various things that happened in the office. And so the idea was, we need to vote for a Republican because they're people of upstanding moral character. And that hopefully, you know, they do a good job in the office and are a respectable person. And we went from that being a possible rallying cry for a Republican candidate to being, well, at least he's not a Democrat. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it was so reductive in terms of the actual content of what was being touted. Now, there were certain things that I was certainly on board with. Everybody was frustrated at the same time with, you know, just all of the politics in politics, you know, and when you say someone's being a politician about something, it usually means that they're like dancing around the subject, that they're not giving a straightforward answer. They're being manipulative. They're hiding something. They have ulterior motives, that kind of stuff. And so there was a certain meta, if you're into video games, there's a certain meta for how to be a politician that everyone was like, yeah, this is stupid. We need to change it. And so the rallying cry of, you know, I'm going to drain the swamp or whatever else that Trump was going off of was a reasonable and good platform. But the problem was just that he was just an awful person. and like, he didn't make any, he was very unapologetic about that. You know, the it was just, this is who he is and that's how he was going to be. And so I could never really get behind Trump as a candidate.
And are you still there now?
At the same time, I appreciate some of the things that I have a friend who has spoken a lot about the, for instance, number of promises in his campaign that Trump made versus the number of actual things that he signed into office or policies that he enacted, things that he accomplished. And so he actually followed through on quite a lot of those. So I appreciate the follow through. I appreciate the positive things that he did as president. That doesn't negate the fact that we really should aspire as a country to elect like reputable people to office, you know, someone who actually has upstanding character.
I think for me, like, so I guess we have, this will be good because I like Donald Trump personally. I think what many people appreciate about Donald Trump is that with Donald Trump, at least what you saw is what you're going to get versus like those people that quote unquote were reputable. Yeah. They may show like one face and do something and stab you behind your back afterwards behind closed doors. And I think a lot of people were seeing right through that. And especially after Trump's presidency, I think he did a good job of exposing more of that and exposing just how many politicians actually just, you know, the whole idea of like reputable character, they do a good, you know, game face. But then when it comes time to actually perform, they're just pretty much, like you said, they're just a Democrat and, you know, in elephant clothing.
Right.
So ultimately for me, I appreciated Trump. Ironically, for me, when 2016 was like my first general election I got to vote and participate in. And I remember I did not like him whatsoever. And he would make me pull out my hair. But it's funny that when I watched his clips from 2016, watched the debates then, oh my gosh, he was right about so many things. And it brought light to just how much the media does manipulate like our minds and tries as far as like framing a certain narrative to get you to think a certain way. And so I think because of that, yes, he is arrogant. Yes, he's an egomaniac. He's narcissistic. I agree with all of that. Is he someone I would go to for Christian or biblical counseling? Not in the slightest whatsoever.
Right.
But at the same time, I think I'd rather vote for someone that is honest and is unapologetically himself versus someone who, again, says one thing and then does another behind closed doors. Like, which I don't know how you feel about Ron DeSantis personally. He's been a good governor, but I think he falls into the stereotypical politician where he does a good game phase behind closed doors, stab people in the back. It's, you know, especially how he managed to sneak in a bill to change the law in Florida to allow himself to run and still serve as governor, for example. And when people do that, that rubs you the wrong way, personally.
Right. Yeah, if it circumvents like the Congress that you have that's intentionally designed to prevent you from just unilaterally deciding to do things like that. Yeah.
So anyways, not to take the floor away from you, but yeah,
it's all good. It's conversation, right?
But I wanted to, it's interesting to hear your political views, and like I said, I think it'll be good for the audience to kind of hear more of that psychological side of things, because I think there's value in how the human mind works. And I guess I want to ask you, like, what makes psychology to you so interesting before we move on?
I heard a joke. I can't remember who said it, but it was that every psychologist is someone who wanted to figure out what was wrong with them. And I the more psychologists I meet, the more true it seems to be. it's definitely just there are certain questions that I've had, certain observations, certain ways that I think that just made the observation and study of how we work as people internally a more interesting study for me. That's really it. It wasn't that it was something that I thought was more important than anything else or more it's not like a passion of mine. It's just I watch, I pay attention, and it was just something that grabbed my attention that I was just like, I consistently like whenever I learn things in this field of research.
So with that in mind, what is something that you're looking forward to being part of the show now, being one of the co-hosts, and what made you even agree to be one of the co-hosts, if you don't mind me asking?
Not at all. It's a fun idea. That's the main thing. A lot of my decisions in life tend to be on that more whimsical side of things of just like, oh yeah, that seems interesting. In fact, I didn't mention it in my introduction, I don't think, but I'm a DJ at this point.
Yeah, no, I did bring DJ.
So I'm a DJ. Yeah, and the way that started is a very good illustration of how I make decisions. Mm-hmm. So I was just looking for interesting work to do. And as part of that, I like to browse Craigslist from time to time to see what's out there. I happened to come across a ad that said, would you like to be a DJ for weddings? And I was like, yeah, I mean, obviously that has to be a scam, but how can I not, you know, respond to that? So I responded to this guy and I was just like, yes, actually, yes, I would like to be a DJ. Now there's more to it if you wanted to hear the rest of that story, but long story short to say that the profession that I've been doing for the last 5 years was based on I didn't realize that was something I wanted to do. Sure, why not? Yeah, let's see where that goes. Yeah. So it's pretty much just, it was an interesting opportunity that I liked the idea for. It kind of fits into the direction that I'm trying to take my life in right now, which is to get more into the production of content than in just the consuming of content. And then it also helps me to practice articulating my ideas in a more concise conversational way to just get some, it's hard to really know what you think if you're not challenged to put it into communicable form. So as long as it stays abstract, you barely even know what you think, let alone what anyone else thinks. So it's just good practice.
So what's the one thing you're most looking forward to?
I would definitely say it is discovery of things that I wouldn't have thought to talk about. This basically like subjects that come up where I'm like, oh, I haven't really put too much thought there. Let's explore that and, you know, think more about it. Or like with maybe if there's something where I'm curious to see what the research is on a subject, I'll look it up and learn that way. I'm a really big proponent of just on the fly learning. It's part of my background as a homeschooler, is just you just learn to enjoy the process of learning something you didn't know before.
Awesome. Well, I am very excited to be part of this show, and congratulations, you actually are part of this
Likewise.
100th edition of all time Taboo Topic. Woo. And that's, I mean, everything you talked about as far as like just having conversations that you wouldn't think to have, or maybe like subconsciously mm-hmm. you thought about it but hasn't really been expanded
right.
on. I guess fits into the theme of the show in general, as far as just having those conversations that people are just don't think about, too afraid to talk about it, or it's just a quiet sentiment, whatever the case may be. It's an open format, and I really appreciate you coming on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks
yes.
for having me. Hope you have
yeah.
a great rest
well,
of your day.
Folks, I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. And until next time we'll be talking about current events for the first time, the whole week in reviews. Remember that. We'll be bringing that back to the show. So I hope you come back to the show. Stay tuned down the road, not today, but down the road. But anyways, hope you have a great rest of your day and week, and God bless. And
this is a reminder that the Biden administration abandoned 9,000 to 15,000 Americans in Afghanistan. Now, you won't hear about this from the media or any politician for that matter, because the global elite have their own agenda that disregards human life and basic human dignity. So, to the families and individuals that have been affected by this abandonment, know that you have not forgotten. Most Americans, like myself, know, or your loved ones, didn't choose to stay behind. If there's any way I can further help besides bring awareness, reach out at Kenjin_Express. I repeat, Kenjin_Express on Instagram. Spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, _Express, if you have by 1 in a millionth chance hear this message. It's not much, but know this, justice will be served for those who lied to justify their incompetence. After all, I believe in God, who is in control of all things, and he says, vengeance is mine. Now, let's get back to the show.